You clean anyone?
No women, no kids. That's the rules.
How much would it cost to hire someone to get those dirt bags?
Who killed my brother?
$5,000 a head.
Wow. How about this? I work for you, and in exchange, you teach me how to clean.
What do you think?
I'll clean your place. I'll do the shopping. I'll even wash your clothes. Is it a deal?
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Red Shoe Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to shoot a high-profile target in Central Park with a paintball gun, Alex Perkins. Perk, how are you doing tonight?
I'm well, thanks. No, not paintball guns. I usually try with squirt guns, but the range is not great.
Yeah, you gotta be pretty up close personal for that.
Definitely.
Do you remember that time? Was it my birthday we went to do paintball? And it was very painful. I was not a fan.
It could have been. Sounds familiar. Paintball is a lot of fun up until you get shot in like the mouth of the face mask and just get paint all up in your mouth. It's great.
It's not a good time. I'm glad I did it. I don't have any desire to do it ever again. welcome to the show, everyone. This is the podcast where every week Perk and I review a movie connected to the last one we watched. For like our show, we post pretty much every Friday on podcast services and YouTube. Tell your friends about it and come watch some movies with us. Last week, we did a little bit of a double feature of the original Mission Impossible, as well as Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. And we followed John Voight from the original. John Voight was 2 weeks ago. John Renault.
Yeah.
I almost had it. John Renault from the original Mission Impossible to this week's movie, Leon the Professional. Perk, why don't you intro it for us?
Yeah, all right. Leon the Professional is a 1994 joint directed by Luc Besson, starring Jean Reno, the aforementioned, Natalie Portman, and Gary Oldman. And it follows a hitman named Leon who, through his neighbor's murder, ends up in the care of 11-year-old Natalie Portman and is training her on how to be an assassin. A couple of fun facts. Natalie Portman beat out 2,000 other applicants for the role.
That's insane.
That's a lot. That is a lot.
Like, I'd love to know how many applicants there are for a standard leading movie role. Because 2,000 seems like a ton, but maybe it's pretty standard. I don't know.
Well, and for child actors, maybe it's different. But, like, to me, that I'm assuming they went, like, city to city with open casting calls to get 2,000 people.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. And then crazy, fun fact, not actually a very fun fact, but an incredibly interesting fact. If you remember the, Stanfield, one of his goonies, Benny, who's standing outside the door and almost
shoots the guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So the actor who played Benny, later became a firefighter in New York and died on 9/11.
Oh my God.
I know. Just crazy, like, chain of events to have happened.
Yeah, because this was 94. Damn.
94, yeah.
There you go. Perk, why don't you go first? What did you think of Leon the Professional?
I think it's good. But I don't have too much either way on it, honestly. It didn't knock my socks off, but I wasn't bored or offended or anything like that. I have kind of a milquetoast reaction. Definitely good, but I noticed on IMDb that this is on the IMDb 250, this is number 37. I think that's a little outlandish.
Yeah, I'm pretty similar. I think it's solid. I have a couple issues with it, and there are things that I like, but also it's good. It's not great. I appreciate how lean it is. And I think the core of the story is really solid. But yeah, nothing really blew my socks off. I do think, like, it's not terrible, but I still don't love how Portman's character was written. I know that the version we watched was the American release, which cut out a lot of, like, the sexual tension stuff.
But not all of it.
Not all of it. And it was still enough to make me uncomfortable. And I just wish instead of that, she just thought he was cool.
Yeah.
And it's that I loved you in more of a family way, as opposed to her literally saying, I want you to be my lover. It's like, I understand that Leon would never do anything, but, and I saw in the fun facts, like, he let her control all of the scenes. It's like emotionally control the scenes, but like, it's still, because like, I think it's pretty clear that she's had a hard life. She knows what sex is. Like, she walked in on her parents having sex in the one of the opening scenes. So it's like, we just didn't need that. I think we really didn't need the sexual side of things. It could have just been a family love, or like, yeah, she thinks he's cool or whatever. And like, it makes sense. Like, yeah, this is probably the first adult that's ever shown her any affection in her life. Like, it all tracks. The movie didn't need that, I don't think, to work. And it was kind of,
I think it lends to kind of some, her character feels a little all over the place to me.
Mm.
Maybe it's because it's not a very long movie. I mean, it's 1:50. It's not short by any means, but
it feels short though. It feels like 1:30.
It's definitely lean. But she kind of flips back. And I mean, obviously she's gone through a traumatic event, but she's like, cold, cool, I want to be a killer, I'm going to shoot this guy in a park, to, hey, I love you, do you want to be my lover? To, hey, like, crying, actually traumatized child. She seems to flip-flop a little bit, which I think is not a critique of her performance, but maybe just the writing for her character.
Yeah, and I think that touches on my other issue with the movie, which is I think it has a lot of seeds of really cool, interesting stuff. It doesn't fully grow them. And you could argue that maybe that's good because it's been too long. I don't know.
From the plant? Because he has a plant?
Oh, that was an unintended pun. That wasn't unintended. But yeah, it's like, I think there are seeds of her being a child that's trying to grow up too fast. But we don't get a ton to develop that. And we get you know, the seeds of her becoming, like, being trained to be an assassin, but never gets paid off. And honestly, I think it's probably better it never gets paid off, because I do like the ending a lot, where she just goes back to school and it's like, yeah, she's a fucking kid. She should not be an assassin. But even with Leon, like, the only, like, I don't know. And they're good scenes, but I like the scenes of him going to the guy from Do the Right Thing, asking for his money.
That's where he's from.
Yeah, I saw him, and he's playing an Italian guy in a restaurant again. The scenes of him asking about his money, and we get one scene, he's like, do you have it? The second scene's like, give it to Natalie Portman. There's just, I don't know, there's just small amounts of these emotional beats, but they're not full arcs, and I kind of wish they were paid off. I don't know, do you hear what I'm saying, or am I just being...
I do, no, crazy? I think you're right. I think that there are some threads that definitely don't get fleshed out enough, and I think... part of that is because this movie kind of relies on a lot of moments, but like in the end when he says, you know, I've tasted life, I want to put down roots, which bash us over the head with the metaphor of the plant, why don't you? But I think that moment, it would have worked a little better if I bought the relationship a little more. And a lot of the movie is their relationship, so I don't really know what else could have been done, but... at that point, I'm not really sure if I'm convinced that he is going to die for this girl who he met. I mean, and time has passed. I think canonically it's like 3 or 4 weeks. But.
But this movie moves fast and we kind of just go through that. Even with the villain, with Gary Oldman, who I think is fantastic and like super freaking creepy, we don't really know anything about him. We know he's a DEA agent that's crazy, but like, we don't understand why, we don't understand his motivation, we don't understand, he doesn't have any goals, like, he's just evil for the sake of being evil, and it's just, he's a scary villain, but I don't really feel anything about him because I don't know anything about him, you know?
So, we differ on this. I think Gary Oldman more than tipped over the edge into extreme goofy overacting. Gary Oldman is a terrific actor, but I think here he is like laughably bad. But maybe that's the point. I don't know. He's just so over the top in a movie where most everything else is pretty reserved. Mm-hmm. You got just this absolute crackhead bouncing off the walls, and I couldn't get into it. I kept being like, it pulled me out of it. I was like, Jesus, Gary. Relax. Yeah.
I mostly enjoyed it, except for when he took that pill and like that, had like an orgasm. Whole, like, what was that?
Yeah, that whole man. It just that's what I'm talking about. Like, I think this is a bit of a black spot for Gary Oldman. I 100% I could see where people disagree. I'm sure a lot of people think this is a great performance, as you do, and I think that's a valid opinion. But for me personally, it stuck out like a sore thumb.
He's your Pacino from Heat for me.
Exactly. Like, I thought Pacino was great in Heat, and you thought he was just all over the place. And I think that's a perfect example, a perfect counterexample where it's subjective, you know? And
yeah.
You cannot argue Gary isn't giving it his all.
No.
He is absolutely giving it his all.
Yeah, the end. I thought he was very intimidating, and that worked for me. But I definitely hear what you're saying on his, goofiness and the pill stuff. I'm like, what are we doing? And the fact that we got no backstory or any motivation or anything from him, he just has these goons and he just has do whatever he wants and kill whoever he wants. Like, I don't know. I did think the violence and the action was very well done. Like the opening scene of Leon taking out, like infiltrating that house and taking out everyone, and he comes out of the shadows and holds the knife to the guy's throat. Like, that was badass. And I'm like, all right.
Yes.
Great establishing scene of establishing who this character is and his skill set. That was phenomenal. And then, when Gary Oldman comes in and kills one of the neighbor's house, that was super brutal. And I thought, like, well shot and well done.
Agreed. A very great scene. I agree with you. I think the action is great. It's super stripped back and it feels pretty, like, brutal.
Yeah,
realistic's not the word I'm looking for, but you're definitely involved in it.
It's not an action movie. This isn't John Wick. Like, and I thought it might go into that at the end when, it's Leon by himself in the room and there's all these people. I'm like, is he gonna fucking like John Wick all these people? Like, that doesn't seem realistic. But then he's like, no, I'm gonna put on a suit's costume and I'm gonna get out of there. Which is like, that's super smart. Mm-hmm. I appreciate all of the action like direction. It was very, very well done and felt real within the world. Even though Natalie Portman shoots a pistol out of the window with no repercussions. Like, what is this lawless New York City back then? Like, people were just shooting people like crazy.
I guess.
Oh, man. And yeah, I did like Leon's character. I liked his wholesomeness. And, we get like he was an immigrant who came in and got in with the wrong crowd, you could argue. He's got his code and he's got I like when he takes his jacket off. He has like all the holsters, with all the guns and he loves milk. Like, he's a very lovable character and one to root for. It's just
definitely.
Yeah. Pairing it with Natalie Portman, who I think like she does a good job. It's just like, her writing, the writing for her character just was not fully there.
I think Jean Reno's pretty terrific. I think Leon as a character is really good. We do end up pretty easily rooting for him. I think Natalie Portman, I think her performance is good. You can definitely see the chops. Like, obviously, she's a fantastic actress. The writing was weird. I agree with you.
Yeah. I think my favorite scene that of hers was when she comes back with the groceries and walks past, her apartment and is ringing the doorbell. And she's like, just please, please. And it's like crying. That was like,
that was
probably the most powerful moment for me in the entire movie. I just wish that she wasn't written the way she was written. It made me uncomfortable. I don't have a whole much more else to say about it. I think pretty solid. I do think I agree with you. It's kind of overhyped.
Not bad, but it's not a movie I'd say everybody go jump up, head to your couch and watch.
Yeah. I do wish we got more. I guess you call this an action movie. More action movies like this. I do feel like in the current state of Hollywood, it is a lot more flash. And don't get me wrong, I love John Wick and stuff.
Less character driven, definitely. Yeah,
exactly. Even like Mission Impossible last week, that's all spectacle, right? It would be nice to get more kind of grounded stuff like this, but it doesn't really fit, I guess, for audiences anymore, which is kind of sad. As far as recommendations, I thought of just other... We've seen a lot of these kind of relationships, like Last of Us, The Road. We get like the old grizzled character with the child.
Yeah, I haven't seen The Road.
I haven't seen it either. I just know that people always quote it when they talk about Last of Us.
I love what's his name?
Viggo
Mortensen. So
yeah,
but I mean, I've heard The Road is just not a fun movie to watch, and it's tough to motivate myself to watch those movies.
Yeah, neither is Last of Us. there's probably an example of a more wholesome version out there, but I can't think of it right now.
Yeah, I mean,
it, Mandalorian, like, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, other protege type movies is probably a good. I think that's, which is funny, because I think the strongest part is maybe not their relationship, but that's the focal point. So I'd say check out more protege type movies.
Yeah. And yeah, unlike everything else we mentioned, like, yeah, she doesn't get, there is no payoff. She does become an assassin. Maybe she does later in life. We don't know. But
yeah,
my take was like, no, she goes back to school and she becomes like a normal person.
I also like the ending.
Yeah. I didn't expect him to die, but I'm like, you know what? Powerful ending. I like it.
No, and it's cool that he took out Gary Oldman, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then she plants the tree at the end. And I love symbolism, but I love symbolism when I can, like, come up with it. Like, when I can craft, like, oh, that doorknob was red. Well, that must mean blank. But in this case, it's like, oh, he's the tree, or he's the plant. He doesn't let the plant have roots, and he is a migrant moving from hotel to hotel.
The fact that he also said that made it worse. Like, if he never said the roots thing.
It's a little too hand-feedy.
Yeah. I thought the plant was going to be some kind of code. Like, he put it in his window every morning to, like, signal to somebody he was okay.
Mm.
But no, he just loved his plant. I did think it was funny them walking, having to move between hotels and them walking down the street and, like, holding the plant and all their stuff. I will say,
the like, romantic part of it I didn't like, but the hard cut from when Natalie Portman tells the hotel concierge that he's her lover.
Mm-hmm.
And then that he opens the door, and then they're immediately just walking down the road with their bags. I like that as a moment.
Even the first time they leave the first apartment, we get the shot of him coming up over the horizon, and you don't know if she's going to be there. And then she pops up, and it's like, all right, that's cute. So yeah, and maybe I shouldn't say this perk because I don't like when movies get remade. I wouldn't mind a remake of this movie, a little bit cleaner, but I worry they would ruin it by making the action too gratuitous and too flashy. So
I think with the current landscape, it would definitely be the bigger focus. It'll depend on who's making it,
right? And who they cast.
Yeah, a lot of the smaller studios don't do a lot of remakes, and a lot of the bigger studios don't remake Leon the Professional.
Right, they're too busy making White Men Can't Jump for some fucking reason.
Which everyone was asking for, man.
Yeah, they're remaking Roadhouse, Perk, and I'm so mad about it.
Dude, no. who's going to be Patrick Swayze?
I don't think they've announced casting yet.
The answer is no one.
No one can do it.
No one can do that role. It's going to be something like The Rock.
God, that would suck.
That would be so bad. Especially because he puts in all his... Isn't that a... Maybe this is just urban legend, but he puts in all of his contracts that he can't lose a fight on screen.
I know that used to be the case, like, for the Fast and Furious movies and stuff.
Shout out to the guy, though. Big donation to the SAG after strike.
Oh, that's good.
Did you see that?
Mm-mm.
I think I saw seven figures was the number. So,
okay, I just looked it up.
A lot of money.
Are you ready for? You might be happy about this. Who's playing Dalton?
Oh no,
Jake Gyllenhaal.
It's so hard to be mad about Jake Gyllenhaal doing anything, but
I still can't see it.
I don't know. I don't think it's right. I will watch it now. Unfortunately,
here's the thing about Gyllenhaal. Did you watch his Hot Ones episode recently?
No.
I'm a big Hot Ones fan, so I watch most of them. I know he's a great actor. I would never dispute Gyllenhaal's a great actor. As a person, though, he gives me the creeps.
Oh, he's a weirdo. He's definitely a weirdo.
He's that kind of guy you can never tell is joking or not, and it makes me very uncomfortable. So I just like him.
Translates on screen a lot, too.
But playing Dalton, who's supposed to be this suave person who's like being seductive at times, I'm like, I don't need to see Gyllenhaal doing that.
We'll see. He's going to have to beef up.
Yeah, definitely. Apparently, Conor McGregor is also in it. Probably on the bad guy side.
Yeah, I imagine he'll probably end up being like the goon that gets his throat ripped out, right?
Right. Yeah, definitely, actually. I wonder who's going to play Sam Elliott's character.
Sam Elliott.
Is he still alive? Just bring him back in. Should be Sam Elliott again. Honestly, not a bad call.
Because, like, now he's an actual old man. Like, back then he was just a make-believe old man.
True. I don't know if he can do the fights anymore. Maybe he can't. No. Shout out to Sam Elliott, but
yeah, just I'm sure they'll just do some anti-aging CG and make him run around like Gumby.
Please, no. For the love of God. All right, well, that is our review of Leon the Professional and also the Road remake, apparently.
The Roadhouse remake, yeah.
So, yeah, there we go. Before we talk about what we're watching next week, it's bonus review time. Perk, where do you want to start with this?
I'll get a quick one out of the way. Indie game review. I played the newly released Viewfinder, which is a, what do they call these? Non-Euclidean geometry, like, puzzle game?
I would say a perspective-based puzzle game.
Kind of like, I'm sure people everywhere have heard of Superliminal, which is a fantastic puzzle game.
Everybody's heard of that game.
Yeah, of course. Another fantastic perspective-based puzzle game, but the mechanic is you have a camera, you take a picture of something, like a Polaroid, you hold up the photo, you click, and then it becomes part of the world. Projected.
You can like walk into the photo, yeah.
Yes. And I had just the most pleasant time playing this game. It's only about 5 or 6 hours start to finish. I have heard, some critique of the story. This actually scratched an itch for me that I reignited with Outer Wilds, where there's not a ton of dialogue, and there's one other character other than you that's like present. It's an AI cat who you can pet, which is amazing.
Gotta do it.
Yep, but you learn through voice logs, like voice diaries from these four scientists who are working together over the course of this project that you're investigating. And I love that kind of stuff. I love picking away at a story as you go over the course of it. It's not a lot of story. It's just them working on a project. But I think the characters are four characters that are never in the game and only in voice logs. I enjoyed them. I liked the characters that we met over the course of the journey. And I don't think this game necessarily needed to have too big of a story.
Whereas, do you think it would have been better if it had no story at all?
No.
Okay.
No, I think
so. It was additive.
The story is definitely good. It's not extensive.
Sure.
Okay. But yeah, the puzzling is awesome. There were only a couple times when I got stuck and needed help, and the answer, of course, was like brutally obvious, like oh. But there are a lot of puzzles where, when you solve them, you're like, oh yeah, that was awesome. The sense of achievement you get from like figuring something out. It was a great like Sunday morning game, which I love those games. Like I've had a lot of that with Outer Wilds was good for that. The Witness recently, and then Viewfinder have all been just like cup of coffee, some like light music in the background or something. Just a nice way to wake up. So.
Awesome.
Sorry for making that like a 5-minute review when I said it was going to be short, but it's like $20, which is maybe a little much, but if it's on sale, definitely buy.
Yeah, it's on my list. I don't know when I'll get to it, but I would like to play it at some point. I've actually yet to play a perspective based puzzle game. Superliminal's been on my list forever. There's a few other ones that have come out recently, but I'll get to it. There's a lot of games out right now.
I think Superliminal at this point is probably cheaper, so I would start there. Yeah,
like $5.
Superliminal has less story, but still has a story. So,
all right.
Which there I also go. Enjoyed.
Yeah. I'm going to give a couple short anime reviews, and then we can get to the big boy. All
right. Yeah.
So I finally finished, just before this, the most recent season of Dr. Stone. I watched the first half of it, and then I just fell off it for a long time, and I'm like, okay, I want to go back and actually finish it. If you don't know, this show is about a post-apocalyptic, I guess, situation where all of humanity got petrified into stone. And then like 3,000 years later, one guy wakes up and he's a super genius and he starts reviving people. And then they're rebuilding civilization and shit happens. This season was pretty good. They've gotten to the point in the show where originally in season one, like the whole season is like developing penicillin. So it's like very like step by step. And it's all real science you could actually do, which is a fun part of it. But you know, they're like, here's every single step we can do to make penicillin. And it's like very, in my opinion, it's very fun to like watch that whole process. Now it's like, oh, we need a thing. We made it already. Like, here's how we did it. But like, we're just going to have it be made. So we got to move on. So that ruins a little bit of magic, but it's still fun to see them do stuff. Like they made a ship and now they're traveling the world, which is kind of neat. And yeah, it's a good time. It's a very fun show. One thing I didn't know going in was because I was getting close to the end of the season and I'm like, man, things are not wrapping up. And season ends on a cliffhanger. It's like, we'll be back in October. I'm like, oh, all right. So they did a season of anime, took a season off, and they'll be back in the fall. So I'll watch it and, you know, sure have a good time with it. But just a very, very solid anime. Not one of my, like, all-time faves, but I'd recommend it. People who like science and, like, survival games, if you like a crafting tree, you know, like you would enjoy this anime. So, yeah, that's Dr. Stone season 3. The other show I watched was, so every season I try to look at all the anime coming out and try to see if anything catches my eye. And this season was pretty dead. We're getting Jujutsu Kaisen season 2, which has been great so far. But there was no like new stuff that was really like piquing my interest. But I watched some people who were anime reviewers, and they mentioned this one called Zom 100 that I'm like, okay, that looks kind of interesting. And normally so this is a zombie anime, and I'm just burnt out in zombies. I really hate zombie stuff. I find it boring. We've done it way too much, and it's often just like very brown and depressing, you know. I just don't really care about the genre. But this one caught my eye because it looks very colorful. So I'm like, okay, what's the premise? And Perk, I'm gonna relate this to I Think You Should Leave, the sketch, the Doggy Door sketch. You remember this one?
The best way to relate anything to me is by relating it to I Think You Should Leave.
So you remember... Yes,
the Darmine Doggy Door.
You remember in the Darmine Doggy Door...
I thought there were monsters on the world.
Exactly. So remember the line in that sketch where he's like, my first thought was I don't have to go to work tomorrow. You know, what did they do to us?
Yep.
That's the premise of this show. So our main character is, you know, just out of college. He's super energetic, loves life, and he started working at this company, and he's so excited. And he gets absolutely just exploited and beaten down by this company for the course of 3 years and becomes super depressed and becomes essentially a zombie himself, symbolism. And then the zombie outbreak happens and he's so happy because he doesn't have to go to work anymore. And the show is called Zom 100 Bucket List of the Dead because the show is like, here's 100 things I want to do before I get eaten by a zombie. And it's super fun and happy and like fun loving. And like, yeah, there's like dark stuff happens, but like, it's a very fun and happy show about like loving life and like not having regrets. And like as soon as he like realizes this, the show, it was kind of like monotone black and white before it becomes like full color. All of the blood spiders like rainbow colored. And it's just like very just fun to watch. So I'm really enjoying it so far. I watched the first 3 episodes that have released and I'm going to keep going along with it. So yeah, I think this one you actually might like, Perk. I can't Malala you because I still haven't watched your Malala. But I think this is one you might enjoy. So
okay.
Cool. Yeah, shout out. If you like zombie stuff and you want something a little bit different than what's typically in the genre, check out Zom 100. It's on Netflix and Crunchyroll. All right, Perk. It's time for the big boy.
Yeah.
Oppenheimer.
Yes, sir.
Why do you want to do this?
Okay, so we'll start with the context. I have tickets tomorrow to go to a 70mm showing. I was going to just go with that, but then this weekend I had nothing going on in the afternoon. I'm like, yeah, I could go see Oppenheimer right now. And so I did. And we'll see, but I'm going to be gone this weekend. But if I find some more free time, I might go and then also see an IMAX showing because IMAX in 70mm IMAX is not an option.
Right.
But you can do 70mm and you can do IMAX. So. Well, we'll see. But the fact that I have seen it once, plan to see it again, and might see it a third time should maybe tip off how I feel about the movie.
Yeah, I saw it in IMAX. Yeah,
why don't you start then?
I mean, it's incredible, right? It's an incredibly depressing film, as it should be. I'm really happy with how Nolan handled the material and where, especially the final line of the movie, not to spoil it, but I really like where the movie ends. Yeah, I mean, I learned so much and things I didn't expect to learn about Oppenheimer, especially a lot of the political stuff. I think was really fascinating. I think how he tells the story, where it's, I mean, Nolan fashion, it's kind of, we're jumping around different time periods. a lot, which I pretty much mostly worked for me. I think I didn't really ever get confused too much. But yeah, the cast and the performances are absolutely phenomenal. And Cillian Murphy better pick up an Oscar nom for this. Like, my God. Hopefully an Oscar win as well. And yeah, I think that, yeah, like, all I can say is, like, they handled the material near perfectly, and I'm sad.
Yeah, I think I gave on Letterboxd, I gave this like a 4.5 star out of 5. But at the time, I'm like struggling to come up with a reason why it's not just a 5 out of 5. Mm-hmm. So that might be revised on second viewing. But yeah, I love this movie so much. There's so much about it, because I agree with you. I didn't know a lot of the ins and outs of the story. Obviously, I knew Robert Oppenheimer, Manhattan Project, the bomb. That's what I knew. But then to you know, get into the deep depths of the story and see all these actors that I know that are great, playing as, you know, as a science kid growing up, like, they're playing scientists from my textbooks, bro. It's like,
Niels Bohr. Like, I'm like, oh, yeah, shit, I know that
it's
guy.
It's almost like a name drop. Like, oh, that there's Heisenberg, there's Bohr. Mm-hmm. You know, they got Fermi in Chicago. Like, it's it's so, it was such a fun little nerd out moment. And I think the movie sits squarely on the shoulders of Cillian Murphy's performance.
Yeah.
And he doesn't drop the ball. He absolutely knocks it out of the park. And the supporting cast around him is flawless. All of the performances that I saw were like people at the top of their game.
Yeah,
I don't remember the last time I saw Robert Downey Jr. this good.
He hasn't really had the chance to lately.
No,
I mean, he did what we called The Judge, which I didn't see, but I think maybe people liked.
Yeah, I haven't seen. But
yeah.
Not to diminish his roles, because he's very good as Iron Man.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Once he's Iron Man, he's been Iron Man, so it kind of withdraws from that. But he is awesome. He's so good in this movie. He has a great... he has a great back and forth with Alden Ehrenreich, who I didn't realize
that was him. Yeah,
and he turns in a great performance too. There's people all over the place. Like, Josh Hartnett is in it and is very good. And
did you catch who was playing Truman?
After the fact, but it was Gary Oldman.
I didn't notice it at the time. It was fun. Gary Oldman.
Incredible. Gary Oldman has now done, he's played Churchill and Truman. So someone was saying, we got to find a way to get him to play Stalin that he can finish the trifecta. But I don't want to spoil it because it's not advertised, but one actor, I'm sure you know who I'm talking about. One actor's in one scene and it's just like bone chilling. Just so good. Just like, oh my God, I didn't know he was in it, and wow, like, I'm scared watching him in this scene.
Well, and I shout out to Emily Blunt in the final third of the movie.
I didn't mention her and Matt Damon, but they are also great.
Matt Damon's absolutely incredible.
And Emily Blunt in particular.
Well, I was worried because, like, the first two thirds, I'm like, she's not have a ton of lines. Like, I thought, and then, at the end, I'm like, okay, yeah, she's a badass.
In the final third, she takes off for sure.
Yeah.
And I think because we've talked about this before, but I think the biggest praise you can give to Matt Damon's performance is I wasn't sitting there the whole time saying, that's Matt Damon.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
He disappears into the character. He does a great job.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. And I agree with you. Like, I have such a hard time with movies that are based on real things that aren't documentaries. Right? A biopic or whatever in this case, like, because you can't really judge the story because it was actually happened. But yeah, it's the way it was handled, and it's so fascinating. Like, Oppenheimer is such a fascinating person, and you know, I was listening to a review of it, and just like, he's such a gray character, but every person is, because people are not good or bad. Like, I feel like you're often switching with him. Like, is he a good person? He's a bad person? He's like, no, he's just a person making these decisions. So you just kind of have to watch and see what happened. It was great.
Yeah. Another actor shout out, a longtime friend of the podcast, Benny Safdie.
Yeah.
Who has a much bigger role than I was anticipating when I first saw him come on screen. But he's also great, obviously. He's one of the strongest young directors out there, and also has great acting chops.
Yeah.
Do we want to discuss the directorial elephant in the room? That being Christopher Nolan's direction in this movie?
I mean, some of the choices were just phenomenal. I don't want to spoil things for people who haven't seen it, but like,
yeah.
I'll just say the scene where Oppenheimer has to give the speech in the gym.
Yeah, so I wasn't even going to go that far as to say it, but I was going to say the scene with the bomb is one of the most masterfully directed, like from a sound standpoint, from a visual standpoint. Yeah. The fact that it's no CG.
Sound design is really on the whole is absolutely phenomenal.
Other than in classic Nolan form, there are a couple dialogue moments that are a little tough to hear. But it's
wasn't
better
too
than
bad,
it has
though.
Been.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad.
But yeah, the bomb scene is spectacular, but it's not even the crown jewel of this movie. The scene in the gym, which at least when you see they're in a gym, you'll now know,
but you won't see what's coming. Like,
it's one of the most bone chilling, just like earth shattering scenes of film I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so well done. And the way that it works together with the sound and the blinding lights, it's just, oh my goodness. It's so crazy good. It's like, it's not horror, but it's burgeoning on like internal, internal horror.
Right. Well, and you reminded me of something I wanted to mention with the bomb scene along those lines too, is like, you know, the bomb is going to work because history and you know what happens, but the reason there's tension is because you don't want it to.
Right.
Like, you want it to fail because of what is coming. And that's because sometimes with biopics or even like prequels, there's not a lot of tension because you're like, well, I know this character lives or, you know, whatever. Or I know it's based on true stories. So I know this happens. Like, even though you know what's going to happen in this movie, there is still so much tension. And that's just such a hats off to Nolan, like crafting it in that way. It's so good, man.
Yeah. I think obviously the visuals and the shot selection and the acting are all great. But the biggest reason to go see this in a theater, I think, is the sound, which we already mentioned. But you feel this movie. You feel it viscerally in your bones with just the bass echoing through the theater. And as with, I'll talk about shortly, but there's just some magic about being in a full theater with everyone experiencing this magic at the same time. Mm-hmm. Which we missed during COVID, and it, you know, we're starting to get back, but this weekend I think was great for theaters, and theaters are just so much more fun when they're full.
Yeah. My brain agrees with you for that statement, but also people are people and they annoy me. And when I go to the theater, fair. I often just,
when people
some
are
shit
respectful.
Happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just, I get annoyed, but yes, my brain agrees with you. I just don't always feel it when I'm actually sitting next to a stranger who's on his phone or moving around or doing shit like that.
I have been spoiled. I've had some pretty good crowds.
I mean, that's Oppenheimer. I mean, yeah, I don't want to go into spoilers because of people who haven't seen it yet, but it is a very good time and highly recommend it. I imagine our audience is probably all going to see it if you're into film at all.
If you haven't already, but man, oh man.
Yeah.
Such a good movie.
So, yeah, Burke, why don't you close us out?
Yeah.
With if you're watching the YouTube version, I'm sure you know what Perk is going to discuss next.
So I'm going to pause here to grandstand for a bit, because I've been seeing this early summer, late spring, I've been seeing just tons of clickbait articles and news headlines like, the box office movie is dead. No, it's not. we don't want to see the shit you're pumping out. Okay. Mm-hmm. That, like, we're really calling blockbusters dead because the Flash flopped. Yeah.
Because Shazam 2.
80-year-old Indiana Jones flopped. I basically, if anything, because these two movies that came out this weekend with Barbenheimer just blew the box office away. Mm-hmm. It's because people have been wanting to go see a movie, but there haven't been good options. And yeah, Mission Impossible is going to be a bust, but that's just poor planning on when it came out, because it came out 1 week before this. If Mission Impossible had come out June 1, it would have tore up the box office, because there was nothing real to oppose it. You know, you got Indiana Jones, but there really weren't that many people that were excited to go see that. If anything, it's not blockbusters are not dead, but people are just less and less inspired to go watch a sequel or a reboot.
Yeah.
You know, if anything, I'm really happy with how this weekend went for film fans, because hopefully it inspires people to take a few more chances and maybe give some money to some directors who are going to do something interesting.
Yeah.
If you marketed if you put $150 million into marketing, people are going to go. It doesn't matter. It can be a movie about a toy doll, and it'll work. Which leads me to the other movie I saw. So I completed, we'll call it a semi Barbenheimer, because it was Friday and then Saturday. So on Friday night, I went and saw Barbie. Another one of what I was talking about, like an absolutely sold out theater. Yep. Everyone there was wearing pink. This was my outfit, you know, had to rep the pink. I tell you what, because Jacob hasn't seen it and he's going to at some point.
Hopefully this weekend.
Yeah. It's really fun. It is a good time. With a preface, because a lot of people are getting very mad about this movie. Don't take your friends who are very frail in their masculinity, because they will not have a good time. And they'll be like, well, they're so mean to the men. Why is it all women? And you're watching a Greta Gerwig movie about a toy doll. Mm-hmm. What were you expecting? So the message is very heavily feminist and very heavily anti-patriarchy. Patriarchy being a main force in the movie, but the visuals, the set design, the costumes, Barbie Land is all, it's amazing. It's awesome. The real world stuff is not nearly as extensive as I was worried it was going to be. My fear was that it was going to be Enchanted, where Amy Adams pops out of a manhole 10 minutes in and then the whole rest of the movie's in the real world. It's not. They only take a brief detour to meet the main protagonist family and then come back to Barbie Land, which is great because everything's great in Barbie Land. Mm-hmm. It's been hit or miss for some people. I thought this movie was funny as hell. A lot of the humor worked for me. It won't work for people who are going to be offended. And it won't work for kids. So this is not a kids movie. I don't think. I think you can get away with bringing like a 4-year-old who will just be entertained by the colors.
Yeah.
But like an 8-year-old, I think will just not enjoy this movie. All the jokes will go soaring over their head.
Is it? I'm assuming it's PG-13.
It is. It's PG-13. Okay. But the humor in it was really funny, and there were a lot of like genuine laugh out loud moments, which I won't spoil, but I'll talk to you about later. And I was obviously Margot Robbie was going to kill it as Barbie, but the real surprise here was how good Ryan Gosling was as Ken.
That's what I've heard, is he absolutely like kind of steals the show.
Yeah. Every scene he's in, he's just on it. He is drop dead hilarious. His delivery is perfect. He fits like the dumb blonde Ken perfectly. Mm-hmm. His chemistry with Margot Robbie, it's not exactly chemistry, but they work together. They play off each other in such a good way. I would say for me, the weakest part of the movie is, Will Ferrell's Mattel crew. Because Will Ferrell plays the CEO of Mattel.
Yep.
I think that whole bit could be pulled from the movie and you wouldn't really lose anything. And you know, Will Ferrell's great, but doesn't have much to do, and his lines are like, okay, pretty funny.
Sure.
But yeah, I like overall I just had a really good time. It helped being in a theater full of a lot of, you know, mid-20s women who are going to laugh at all the jokes. And I saw it in a more progressive part of town. So it was the right audience. And I've heard a lot of people say that half the jokes didn't land. There wasn't a joke that missed in the showing I was at, which made it all the better. And given maybe if I watch this movie back on my couch, just me, it won't be as good for me. But with the experience of the full theater of everyone just having a great time, it was really fun. So I would say I can't recommend Barbie enough, but I won't recommend it to a lot of people who I don't think will enjoy it or who will look at it through the wrong lens. Because at the end of the day, it's a movie about a doll. So yeah. Get over it.
I can't wait to see it. The plan is to see it this weekend. Funnily enough, I waited to see it because my roommates were out of town and we all wanted to see it together. But one of my roommates, Alyssa, is actually going to see it with her girlfriends like on Monday, I think. So me and my roommate Joseph, the two of us are going to go together. I think it's just hilarious. I can't wait. I'm a massive Ryan Gosling fan, so that's probably what I'm most excited for, because everyone has just said that he absolutely kills it.
His dynamic with Simu Liu as well.
And I love Simu.
So great.
That's going
to
be awesome.
Also, sorry, I forgot. I hate to do it, but obviously Michael Cera as Alan is also great.
Yep, I heard that as well.
he's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a great time, so I can't wait for that. And going back to what you're saying about the blockbusters stuff, I totally agree. And I would argue people should just be more open. Like, I hope that Turtles does well in a couple weeks when that comes out. I think Spider-Verse ended up doing very, very well, which makes me happy. Stuff like that I hope will continue to kind of grow the box office. But yeah, stop churning out Fast and Furious movies and shitty DC movies, and let's get back to some good stuff.
On that topic too, I was a little bit unpleasantly shocked, but I have not had trouble getting a movie ticket in like a decade.
Even maybe, for Oppenheimer?
Maybe ever. No, until Oppenheimer.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Come like Thursday, like last Thursday, I was like, yeah, I'll just, you know what, I'm going to see Oppenheimer. I should probably grab a ticket. And it's like, uh-oh, the 70mm and the IMAX showings were all either sold out or you could only sit in the front row through like today. Like for 5 days of the weekend, it was fully sold out or you had to sit with like a neck brace. And right. that's great for cinema, but annoying for me because now I have to go to a Wednesday showing when I was like, yeah, you know what? My thought was I might have to compromise and go see like the 2:30 p.m. 70mm showing, and it's like,
right.
No, dude, I can't even see it until a week from when I was looking. But
right, yeah.
Little fun fact for you, apparently. So as mentioned, you can't see the 70mm IMAX cut in Minnesota because we don't have a theater that can do it.
Right.
But there's one in Dallas, and I saw someone talking about how it's been selling so well that they added, like, it's sold out for until August 9th, every show. And it's to a point where on the weekends, they added 2:30 a.m. and 6:50 a.m. showings.
Oh, my God.
I know.
That's awesome.
It really brings back your faith, and it shows that, yeah, auteur directors have a draw. You know, you got to believe in a project. And
much as I love that, though, how many directors actually make IMAX on film?
Only one, really. I mean, there's only one that can do this.
Yeah.
It's Christopher Nolan. Because I think he rented two out of the four existing 70mm IMAX cams. They invented shooting IMAX black and white film for this movie. IMAXs couldn't shoot black and white until this movie. Like,
goddamn.
The dude is a purist for his tech, that's for sure.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah, I was gonna mention. I have not had the same experience with movie tickets because I'm a Marvel fan, so I try to see what's opening weekend, and then that's a thing. But I agree with you.
Which is why you got your ticket. Tricky. Yeah, that's why you got your ticket in advance, like a smart guy.
But I didn't for Oppenheimer, and I'm like, let me peek. I mean, I was going by myself, so I'm like, oh, it'll be fine. But I was like, oh, it is not fine, especially because like the showing times were, because like 6 o'clock was sold out immediately, and like, I'm not going at fucking 9 o'clock, so I'll be out until past one.
No, so, and like, I guess I'm going to 2:30. It's you know, everyone's like, the clickbait is Barbie blew away Oppenheimer at the box office, as if it isn't a rated
an hour
R movie.
Shorter.
An hour, like, yeah, rated R movie, less family appeal, and also Barbie is over an hour shorter. Yeah. So other than the fact that people are scared to go see a 3-hour movie, you also can't fit as many showings into the day.
Yep, exactly.
Because you can't dedicate every theater in your cinema to Oppenheimer. You got to have someone playing Ruby Drachman, Teenage Crackman, or whatever.
Did that come out yet?
Yeah, it August. Did. I've heard it's decent. I don't, yeah. Whatever. I'm not going to watch
I know,
it.
I heard that my boy Straw Hat Goofy has a cameo in it.
Oh, all right.
Which is kind of cool, but not enough for me to go see it. All right. Well, that is our show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Next week, we're going to be following Natalie Portman to Annihilation. I am excited and also scared to watch this movie. I haven't seen Ex Machina. I haven't seen any Garland stuff. Have you?
No, I've not.
Okay. So I've heard this movie is wild, and I don't know much of anything about it. So should be very interesting. That'll be on Netflix. So Annihilation on Netflix for next week. But until then, thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye-bye.